Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, coming to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns and Yidinji Country. That's BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to the NIRS, National Is Radio Service. Have you seen Yarnup Strong, 1-800-422-416. Now, tourism on track for full recovery as new data shows strong start to 2023. With that, I'm going to chat with Professor Sarah Gardiner, Director of Griffith Institute for Tourism. Professor, how are you? Good morning.
Good morning, Trevor.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Thumbs up regarding recovery for tourism on track for full recovery. There's light at the end of the tunnel.
Absolutely. The tourism operators are very happy to see visitors returning, particularly growth in domestic tourism or Australians getting out there and travelling.
And so domestic, what about the international market?
From an international perspective, it may just take a little bit more time. We're about halfway, so we're at about 50% where we were pre-pandemic. But the forecasts suggest that by about 2024, we'll start to see full recovery, and by 2027, we'll actually exceed the numbers that we were seeing pre-pandemic.
Yeah, fantastic. And it was COVID-19, which was the dampen on thing, turned the world upside down. But like I said, there's a cleaner slate, you could say, in regard to moving forward.
Yeah, so there's some really good things happening. Obviously, a lot of Australians have found their love for travelling in their home country again.
Yes.
But from an international perspective, there's still a couple of hurdles that we need to jump over, particularly the restart of the China tourism market. China was our largest visitor market and also our biggest spenders pre-pandemic. So really welcoming back the Chinese are a key part of international tourism rebounding for Australia.
Yeah, and you mentioned domestic, which is, we couldn't travel overseas, so Cairns became the new Bali. So it was great for us up here, but we still had to navigate through COVID-19. But, things are looking good up here in Far North Queensland regarding tourism.
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing great growth in North Queensland tourism, up about 75%. On the previous year, and so that really strong growth is obviously really great for particularly the small tourism operators that operate around your region.
Yes.
About 98% of people employed in tourism are employed in small and micro businesses, so the small business community is really the backbone of the tourism industry.
And I would like to talk about First Nation tourism. I was lucky enough to be down at ATE, Australian Tourism Exchange, representing Experience Co, Reef Unlimited, Dreamtime, Dive and Snorkel. But the amount of First Nation tourism operators was overwhelming. It was fantastic, the amount of people involved in business and running their business in this industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really impressed by the amount of Indigenous operators at the Australian Tourism Exchange as well, ATE. And it was great just to see so much diversity of product, really great cultural experiences for our international visitors, but also that keen interest from the domestic market as well.
So looking ahead, so what's in store? They've got the Q1 2020 results are in line with the UNWTO. What's it, UNWTO?
Yes, absolutely. So globally, we're seeing a much faster bounce back than what we've seen even here in Australia. Globally, we're back to about 80% of pre-pandemic levels. The Asia and the Pacific, which Australia is part of, is a little bit slower in its recovery. We're, as I mentioned before, about 50%. But I think as people start to think about those bigger trips, maybe those once-in-a-lifetime travel down to Australia for these holidays to visit the Great Barrier Reef and other parts of Australia, I think that's when we're going to start to see the real uptick in international visitation.
It also creates a nice platform for future businesses. I mean, this beautiful big island that we sit on, we've got so much to offer. And so there's room for growth, you could say?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's still a lot of room for growth. Particularly like to see some young entrepreneurs come back into the tourism industry. Obviously, the past few years really hasn't been a reflection of what's been happening over the last 20 years in tourism. We've seen fantastic growth, pretty much double-digit growth for the last at least 10 years. So I think there's some great opportunities, particularly for young entrepreneurs wanting to get into the tourism market and create some new product for us.
And what about students? Is there scope or is there any data about people in looking at an industry, tourist industry, as a career pathway?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's some more work we need to do in that aspect of the industry. A lot of people left the tourism and hospitality industry during the pandemic, so attracting those people back. We've seen quite innovative strategies from the industry in terms of making it really easy to apply and go through that recruitment process, but also thinking about markets that could offer really great hospitality experiences, so particularly looking at women in tourism, people with disabilities, and as you mentioned before, Indigenous people obviously working in the tourism industry, and that could create a really great diversity and really interesting experiences for our visitors.
Now, of course, we had a lot of drama regarding rental apartments or houses as such, and a lot of our backpackers and even Airbnbs went into the residential side of things. Did you see that happen, or is there scope for that coming back, especially the backpacker market?
Yeah, I think that's a sort of unanswered question at the moment in terms of where we're sitting in terms of hostel bed nights and bedrooms for the return of the youth travel market. The development of the Australia-UK Free Trade Agreement, I think, will be a great step forward in terms of bringing back working holiday makers. I think that's a key part of the market, is really driving young people to come and visit Australia. They stay longer,
yes.
And as a result, their total trip spend is the largest out of all of our visitor markets. And obviously, they're playing a key role in our economies through providing workforce for many of our businesses as well. So they're a really key component of restarting the tourism industry and getting it to bounce back.
All right. So full recovery, which is fantastic. Look, great talking with you, Professor. Thank you very much for sharing. All the best to you. Stay warm, and we'll yarn soon.
Yeah, thanks so much, Trevor. Great talking to you too.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
A deadly yarn there. That's Professor Sarah Gardinia, Institute for Tourism, and talking about the full recovery for tourism, on track for full recovery, as new data shows, strong start to 2023. And I want to also give out a big shout-out to First Nation tourism operators, as I met many of them down there at Gold Coast for ATE, Australian Tourism Exchange. And our black people are front and centre in regarding tourism, and plus working on country and turning into a business entity as such. Fantastic. Success breeds success. Keep doing what you're doing, your mob. Too deadly. And this is your daily program, National Talk Black, and come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country, BBM Bumba Group Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Big shout out, NERS. Too deadly. Yeah, to Deadly Mob, welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say and yarn up strong. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Call that number, yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim, 20 Trevor Murray from the Curry, coming live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your dingy country, BBM Bumper Brip Media, 9.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. Have your say and yarn up strong, your mob to Deadly. Looking at the top stories for news today, our New South Wales police less likely to give Indigenous offenders warnings for minor cannabis offences. A report has found a discrepancy in the state's cautionary scheme designed to keep people out of court for low-level cannabis offences. And the news there is with the New South Wales Bureau of Crime Statistics and Research report found the caution rate for Indigenous offenders was 11.7% compared with 43.9% for non-Indigenous offenders. So that's the news there regarding cannabis and First Nation people. Looking at migrants, got a fair go. It's our turn to pay it forward with the Indigenous Voice to Parliament. If multicultural Australians stand in solidarity with Indigenous people, the Indigenous Voice to Parliamentary referendum will succeed. Signatories to the new website multiculturalvoice.org include several Indian Chinese community organisations along with the Sri Lankan, Italian, Irish, Iranian, Greek, Vietnamese, Filipino, Sikh, Islamic, Hindu, Buddhist, and Pacific Islander community groups, to name just a few. However, it is a strange attempt to counterbalance the unprecedented expression of multicultural solidarity with Indigenous people. The ABC and SBS grasped the straws. They platformed Jamal Dada, a former candidate for the United Australian Party, who claimed that he had started a multicultural group to oppose the Voice. So there it is. Other news here with First Nation mob, the Sydney Morning Herald. We are the voice from the bush, spirit of Yunupingu, to spur Yes campaign. Indigenous Affairs Minister Linda Burney will travel to the Northern Territory this week to attend the Barunga Festival. 35 years after Bob Hawke was founded, a famous treaty request by esteemed rights activist, the late Yunupingu. So using that platform, Indigenous Toronto Tourines outraged after giant alcohol and covers up residential school mule. Mural. Molson Coors Beverage Company hastily removed a giant booze advertisement Tuesday that was mistakenly erected on top of a mural in downtown Toronto honouring the victims and survivors of residential schools. The situation came to light early in the day when members of Toronto's Indigenous community gathered outside a building on College Street to express outrage that the 16 by 20 foot mural had been covered up. So look before you leap is a statement there. Have you saying yarn up strong, add to the conversation. Maybe you want to talk about some of those topics, but all ears here for whatever topic you want to talk about here on National Talk Black with Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. Deadly number 1-800-422-416.
Yeah. My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trek.
1-800-422-416.
How many times I tried to run away, to live a quiet and peaceful life, but failed. I straightened out my life and took control. The life I chose to live has took his toll. Looking in the past, I realize that there's a time to fall and time to rise. I had bad time in my life, and that's for sure. To start again. So many times I see, hear and wonder about the time when I was a kid. I still remember the old. I pick myself back up to reach my goal.
Yeah, that's Tonki Logan. There's so many times here on your daily program. Have you saying Yarn Up Strong? Deadly number here, 1-800-422-416. Yarn Up with the Bally One here, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. Coming to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your Gingy Country. BBM, Bumbleboop Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Have you saying Yarn Up Strong? 1-800-422-416. Now we've got the segment Which Way Yarn, proudly sponsored by Pocone, IGA, Brinsmead. And they give us a box of food here at Edmonton, from Edmonton as well. Here at Bummer Bipper and Healthy Living, Healthy Lifestyle Message Live with the Edmonton Police. Come to join me in the studio. We've got Senior Sergeant Glenn Delay and his daily bodyguard, Steve Grant, Police Liaison Officer. Gentlemen, good morning. How are we?
Yeah, good morning, Trevor.
Morning, Trevor.
You got there? You got there? Try that again, bro.
Trevor.
Yeah, no? You're lucky there. Hello.
Hello.
Yep.
You're there.
You're there. Thank you. You're there physically.
Physically.
Just weren't there in hearing form, but you got it there, brother.
Mm.
Steve, who are you mob? Where are you from, brother?
Steve Grant from Jetabal.
Gitomai area, which is the tropics of the rainforest of Ravensow and the Cardball Herbert Valley area.
Wet city, my brother. Wet city. Look, correct. A beautiful day today, and aren't we lucky to be in it, gentlemen? Senior Sergeant Len Loy, how you going, brother?
Yeah, very well, thanks.
Now, you weren't here last week.
No, where was I last week? Oh, I was doing interviews at our station.
Okay, righty, yeah.
So some interviews for our new sergeant position, so we'll
Right.
Putting some people through our paces.
Out at Edmonton?
Mm, correct.
So you will have someone working alongside you then?
Yes.
Or are they going for your job? You move on. Talk to me.
I've got three sergeants, and with some expansion of our workforce, I'm getting another two.
So. I'm getting another two.
Yeah. So
They're all sergeant. So you're the senior detective sergeant.
No, just a senior sergeant.
So you're above the guys that are coming on board.
Mm, correct.
Okay. Got you.
Yep. Yep.
So I'm trying to ascertain here. So two stripes, three stripes, sergeant.
Yep.
If they're all three stripes. How can you be in charge? Are you in charge of the police station?
I got the pineapples on my shoulder.
Oh, the pineapple. Thank you. I didn't look at the pineapple.
Yeah. So I lost all my stripes and ended up with pineapples.
Pineapple. There you go. So the other brother sergeants have got three stripes.
Great. Hooks. Yep. Hooks.
No one got pineapple.
Yep. Three hooks.
I'm a mango man, really. But anyway. Gentlemen, good to see you both. Thanks for coming to the program. Now, Commission of Inquiry into Queensland Police Services Responses to Domestic Violence and Family Violence, Recommendation 6060.
Yep.
So tell us about this portfolio, please, gentlemen.
Yeah, so look, we have had, just in the last year, the Commission of Inquiry into the Police Services Responses to Domestic and Family Violence. Mm. That resulted on a couple of tragic incidents where, we've had like Hannah Clark, Doreen Langham, and Tara Brown, some very horrific domestic incidents, which has resulted in the death of these women and Hannah Clark's children. So,
condolences to the family. Yes, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And look, it's something that's police will always welcome is an external review of how we respond to jobs and also how we can polish up. Any of our actions or policies on responding to those sorts of very critical incidents. But today we're specifically looking at our recommendation 60.
Okay.
Which basically says within 6 months, the Queensland Police Service reviews its operation procedure manual to more accurately reflect the diverse roles undertaken by police liaisons officers within the Queensland Police Service.
So that's the hat Stephen wears, Stephen Grant.
It is.
PLO, yep.
Yeah, and then the other thing, just for your listeners there, operational procedures manuals basically tells police how we do our job. So there's a whole heap of policy there to tell us whether we can do this or we can't do that, and that ties straight into with legislation.
Yes.
This has been reviewed, and our operational procedures manual has been reviewed, and now reflects the importance of Steve's role with domestic violence.
Sure. Across the board, very hard to police domestic violence.
It is.
We all have partners. Mm. We have disagreements and arguments, what have you. It could escalate, but in some situations, it could lead to fatality, and that's what we're trying to prevent. But we're trying to prevent physical action.
Yeah.
Yeah, from a culprit to a victim as such, and mainly men on women.
Yeah.
And
like we were speaking before we come on air here, the DV is very complex and every relationship has its different issues.
Sure.
And certainly our First Nations issues are also different to what other other incidents of domestic violence.
Yes.
They've had a very different upbringing, different lifestyle, different culture.
Yeah.
And that's where Steve's becomes very important for the guys on the front line, because he can provide that advice.
Sure.
And link in with those families. Mm.
But this is the black space in regarding First Nation. I mean, domestic violence doesn't discriminate. It's across the board.
Mm. Yep. Correct.
So I'm just trying to ascertain regarding the role as a PLO in this portfolio regarding domestic violence, yes?
A prime example of that would be there's been an involvement with First Nations people. I've taken up with the respondent and the aggrieved.
Yep.
I've informed my fellow officers. I think this lady has got an issue here where she's been a victim.
Yes.
And, my background is to give feedback to my colleagues.
Colleagues.
In regards to this matter.
And the decision that needs to be made, whether remove the culprit as such.
cultural issues there.
Cultural issues, the conversation, yes.
Yeah, where children can be placed, extended family.
Mm.
With the domestic violence definition of a relationship, it does include you know, parents that you know, you've brought up another child, and but you still call them
sure,
you know, father, uncle, auntie.
Exactly. The cultural sense. Yeah.
So that's right. So sometimes for our state officers, they can't see that
naive to understand that. Yes, exactly. Yep. Right, which is so very important.
Yep.
Let me ask a question: in a domestic violence situation, do the police, for safety wise, remove the mother and the children?
Look, if,
or is it just the culprit? Or
if whatever's going to defuse the incident,
defuse the situation.
But
yep,
certainly,
yep,
if the culprit or the respondent or the perpetrator is the person causing the most grief, that's who would we
of course. Okay, removing. Okay, Ronnie. Yeah.
Look, sometimes it may be that the victim is happy to go to a, you know, relative's place.
Sure.
Feel safer there.
And, yep. And would the police carry that?
Yeah, of course.
We'd good. Okay. That. Beautiful. Facilitate that.
Yeah.
Well, you don't know the situation, especially if you come to first time a domestic violence with a couple.
Mm.
You don't know how far this has been going on,
yep,
or you don't know how dangerous the situation can escalate to.
Yeah.
So you just got to play by ear, don't you? You know what I mean?
Well, the situations, like I said, I've been involved with since I've been up there. I mean, I've been to a number of jobs with our fellow officers. I've been to this same address. Like 10 times.
There you go.
So in 3 months.
Yep.
You know, and obviously so there's something.
There's a habit there. There's a,
a cycle that.
Cycle there.
It's occurring on these days while kids are at home or at school.
Sure.
You know, and you've got to take that into the principle to.
We're talking about 3 or 4 times visiting one place, then.
And that may just resolve then with Steve doing a follow up.
Yep.
Yep.
He can go
thereafter.
Offer some other resources.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And so you know, when the frontline police turn up, it's usually fairly heated.
Yep.
Of course.
And that's probably not the best time for Steve. His skills then are probably to advise police on what's going on.
Yep.
But later on, when police aren't there, everything's settled down. People have cooler heads, less alcohol or drugs.
Yep.
And then Steve can come and have a chat to some of those families, and you know, just point out that this issue they've got in their relationship is affecting theirs and all their families' lives.
Yeah, as well. Yep.
And there's also cases where I've been to where, you know, an order's been taken out 2 or 3 days later, both parties are back again. You know, he's been served with documents not to attend that dress.
Yes.
Then that cycle, you know, obviously becomes.
And if he's not allowed to attend that address.
Correct.
But if the female asks him to come in.
It's still a breach.
If if something happens again, domestic violence starts or an argument starts, whatever, he's still on a breach even though she invited him back.
Yeah. And if we're going to break that down even further, sometimes when people are, you know, served with their orders, they don't fully understand the conditions on the orders.
Okay.
So,
right,
so it that may take Steve to come in and say, mate, did you realise this condition here says absolutely you cannot
iterate.
Yep.
The situation. Yep.
Because, you know, each order has different conditions.
Sure.
And so.
So the culprit, respondent needs to know what they are, if that's the case.
Yeah, because we don't want him breaching his order at all.
Sure, you know, exactly.
And that could be also by communications, by texting.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yes, exactly.
That's
all communications.
That's a breach.
Yeah, that's a breach. Okay. So you just answered my question, but if a female communicates with him via phone, text, or opens the door for him to come in, back in...
He could tell the
child.
It's
still a breach.
He could tell the
child. Because the breach goes for a certain amount of time, isn't it?
Yeah, so most orders these days are made for 5 years.
Okay, there you go.
Yep, so, and look, they can be varied if the relationship sort of, you know, improves. But look, the majority of the orders we have are just mandatory conditions, which basically means... the couples can remain together. Just don't commit domestic violence again.
Sure, you know? Exactly.
Yeah. But look, with recommendation 60, another place that I've seen where the PLOs are effective is with our Torres Strait Islanders.
Yep.
They speak Creole.
Okay, language, yeah.
And there's some real language barriers there with state police to understand. Sometimes we may have a perpetrator that's threatening and aggrieved, but in Creole.
Yeah.
And, you know, we try and convert that to our English or get her to convert it to English for us, and it doesn't seem so threatening.
Yeah, gotcha. You know, yeah, gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Where, you know, some of our liaison officers will absolutely say, no, that was a threat, and this is why it's a threat. And in our culture, this is how it should be taken and received by the aggrieved.
Well, it shows the importance of having PLO on board with Queensland Police then.
Yep, absolutely.
A breakdown of communications. Well, there it is, front centre.
Yep.
Responsibilities of PLOs, it all varies, doesn't it?
Yeah, look, we've got that operation procedures manuals in front of us, and we won't read through them, there's a big list there, but they are their roles and functions, and Steve would know what role is.
Like it's a lot of trust and a lot of understanding from a cultural point of view also.
Sure.
There's decisions where I would make to say, Sergeant Dalloway, I think this is out of context, and I think the poor victims has got something here too.
Okay, and police colleagues would take on board PLO. Steve's advice then, if that's
absolutely
the case.
That's his role.
His role. There you go. And colleagues, police officers, take on board his recommendation, open in the sense of...
Yeah, look, that's his expertise,
Sure, exactly. And there's respect for that decision.
Well, just like I said before, I've been to that address 10 times.
There you go.
Obviously, there's a pattern working out here.
Okay.
And I might have... the officers will always do a check on that address prior to dealing with both parties.
Yeah, sure.
Saying that there is an order in place.
Yeah.
He or she shouldn't be there, so... Yeah.
Well, like I said, we all go through disagreements, arguments with other halves, but we've got to prevent domestic violence when it comes physical or escalations, and, it could be very dangerous for all involved, and that's what we're trying to prevent.
Yeah.
And that's your job, to protect and serve,
And the hardest thing that I've seen, Trevor, is when children get involved, it breaks you down,
Exactly.
Dad's been taken away, mum's been taken away.
Mm.
Auntie or uncle or grandparents have to look after the
siblings. Yeah, sure. Exactly.
It's very hard from a cultural point of view.
And we've got to remember that them children are watching and they're learning their adult behaviours from
yours. There you go. Yeah. They're getting scarred with it mentally, physically, and emotionally. And then, but then young brother will be looking up at dad thinking, oh, so this is why I got to act with wound?
Yeah.
Mm. Sort of mentality.
Yeah. And you really do notice it when we attend a house and the children are desensitised. So, mum and dad have had a big argument and there's usually injuries and children are watching cartoons like there's nothing actually going on.
Exactly. They're used to it sort of thing.
Yeah, that's really
which is sad.
Really concerning. There's some massive alarm bells that we need to pick up on.
Yeah. Mm. Well, the white ribbon, that's what we're talking about here. Domestic violence got to stop. And, I was interviewing a sister, a professor at that, doing paperwork studies on 151 women fatalities over domestic violence. And that's 151 too many.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And that's what I'm trying to burn. And I always come to mind when I saw domestic violence. I think of Brisbane, where that fellow killed his wife and his three kids and burnt them, put the car on fire, and in Cannon Hill, I believe.
Hannah Clark. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so I think of that. I mean, it doesn't come to that. And the mentality of an offender is, well, if I can't help you, no one else can. Sort of thing mentality.
It's just. And look, I think
devastating.
The key is reporting all acts of domestic violence and family and friends getting behind that victim and giving police the evidence they need. It may be a statement, whatever evidence we need so that we can at least hold that perpetrator to account.
Sure.
And that's not just helping the victim, that's helping the perpetrator as well down the track.
Exactly.
Stops them from going to prison and can get them on the right track as well. Just lets them know that the whole community is watching.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And that's the thing. Well, you can't force love, Sometimes some people aren't supposed to be together, and go separate ways. I mean, we've all had past girlfriends, so to speak, haven't we, Then you find the one
the one that you're afraid of.
Well, there you go, the one you're afraid of. I wear the pants of my relationship. I want you boys to know that. It's a private conversation. So thank you. Very important conversation. Commission of Inquiry into Queensland Police Service Responses to Domestic and Family Violence, Recommendation 16. That was our topic today. But thank you so very much, Dillerman.
And just remember also, Trev, there is services out there that can assist both males and females.
Yes.
And our support members from the Queensland Police Service here with the Family and Domestic Violence Team.
Yes.
I mean, there is outreaches out there for both males and females.
Well, exactly. Well, if you're emotionally hurt or you're angry or your mind's out of whack and regarding the whole world, there's help and support there for you.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep. And, talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like a week after the actual incident, you're not thinking about that. I mean, like, you know, so it's just the heat of the moment, you know. But we just don't want escalations and don't want, of course, no fatality.
Yep.
So thank you very much for coming in, gentlemen. Now, I will state the fact that I noticed that you drove in a very colourful-looking deadly police car there. I'm loving the First Nation art on that.
That's the...
That's
the one we spoke about a few weeks back with the commissioner.
Commissioner?
She's... that's Steve's new...
She'd come through.
PLO car.
There it is. And that's the Edmonton police car?
Yes.
Have you got only one car painted up like that?
That's the only one we've got painted up.
It's
specific for our PLO. So.
Isn't that deadly? Well, yep. There you go. You're up market now, brother. Uptown, brother.
Well, the good boss here was a bit upset considering our fellow PLOs in Innisfail are getting a maroon one.
Hey, Queensland, a maroon one.
Yeah.
You should have waited back a bit then.
I know.
But then you're good to see the beautiful Indigenous artwork there.
It is.
Let's talk football. Queensland, state of origin.
It would have been handy.
Would have been deadly.
It would have been handy.
There you go.
Because you said yes
to this artwork, you can't say yes to a maroon car.
Well, the maroon car has the artwork as well.
Oh, right.
It's just maroon.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, that's okay.
Two wham bammies there.
Yeah, so
Indigenous and Queensland.
Too early. too early.
Yeah, at least it's not blue. So.
There you go. Yeah. Colourful. All right, boys. Thank you for the yarn. We'll talk soon, gentlemen.
Thanks, Trevor.
All the best. Beautiful yarn there with the boys in blue, Edmonton Police, and that segment which we're yarning, a very deadly yarn, a very important yarn. We're talking about Commission of Inquiry into Queensland Police Service responses to domestic and family violence, recommendation 60. So the rules and regulations in regards to that, and look, it is hard yakka regarding the job that the boys and girls in the blue uniform got to do, especially domestic violence, you know. We don't know how far it could escalate to, but when I talked to that professor last week, and deadly sister, who's studying the papers on regarding 151 deaths in regards to domestic and family violence, and that's 151 too many. So, you know, with first responders and actions and what we need to do to keep everybody safe, but sometimes you don't know what a perpetrator is going to do. But look, very important having these conversations anyway. Just you're out there, you're listening, tweaks a thought, a process, and regarding maybe I need to do something about my drinking or my anger, or you know, maybe I need to do something about relationships, you know. We need to close that gap anyway. But have you say, yarn up strong, add to the conversation here. National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Want you back in my life. Back in My Life, Alice DJ here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Going to catch up with Selwyn on the line. Selwyn, good morning. How are you, my brother?
Good morning, brother. I always choke up, brother. But the special thing that I'm going to say this out to you, brother. What you said about the bloke and his kids, eh?
Yes.
Yeah, set him alive. I want to say this to a brother. And did up to Bernice Kelly, brother, the last millisecond when he said, kids, you know, Murray kids were then gone down Norgrave Road, it's on the opposite side of the road.
Yes.
And why I say that, brother, I want to say, I mean, I have any immigrant, any white people that, you know, the rednecks that listen to the program, I want to say, listening to you and Bernice shows, but you don't see it on the crime side, on the, like you say, Facebook and all them colony, Facebook. Mm. You won't see that. Black fellows telling white fellows they're never monopoly on disgust, brother. We are just as much as disgusted on what whites do to what they and what black fellows do to black fellows too, brother.
Exactly.
And I think there come a time when our young people too that are doing all that stuff, you know, they hide behind ethnicity, brother. Our ethnicity just because they, and brother, we're going to be victims too, you know, brother.
Yes.
We can be victims.
Okay.
I mean. You know, walking down the road or knocking off a car. And, you know, there was a couple of cars that passed me quickly too, brother. But we can be victims too. But mainstream media and the monopoly they have on a lot of the Facebook stuff, they won't tell you that. They attack ethnicity collectively, brother.
True.
And, brother, on that, that all the support for the migrants and for the voice, brother, I want to say... I think Malcolm X says, if you control media, you control people's thinking.
Mm.
And I want to talk about, suppose our public broadcaster, ABC and the SBS. It's fashion that way now, especially on Q&A, that all the no's are racist. But they don't tell you about the other black ones, brother. But I'm with Lydia Thorpe now, brother. Like I said, I'm going to have a... Because if I say no, if all the black ones that I do say no, how many of the LNP are going to take the credit? And I want to say, talk about the U.S. win-win situation, brother. You know, like I said before, when everybody knows that when the U.S. Sneezes, Australia kisses the cold. And why I say win-win, brother, when... Whitlam didn't was given land rights to old fellow Gwynjian, old fellow Lingiari, and they didn't look like he was going to extend the lease on the spy based Pine Gap. And Bugby did LNP come in and they extended the thing out. And I can I read Robbie Thorpe, brother?
Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, Robbie Thorpe on sovereign union in his answer to Chris Smith's and extract. The British Crown strategy, it's something to get consent. That never happened. The British Crown, something about that. They didn't get consent to come to this country or whatever they've done to this country. And he said, anything without consent is a crime. You can't get consent later. When it suits them, that's why the issue of manufactured consent is such a big deal. And brother, it's often said on the program, the government or the white folks, they will always make what is morally wrong legally right, and it's no good. After we enter constitution, well, it's there now, brother. It's like us giving them consent. And I keep saying, brother, you know, Darnley Airmore, you and me, brother, we're connected to Darnley, brother. Way out there, you know, like when I feel like squirming, brother. This next war, it's going to be a conventional war, brother. It's going to be, if it does happen, it's going to be be a nuclear war, brother. And the same way when I talked about Stefan Armbruster, you know, brother, how they removed, forcibly removed people, bomb off from old Cape Bedford, brother. And also say that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen today. Coming up to the Stinger, and with the spaceport now, they're talking about, like when that brother joined me, brother, they said his support come from Adam Good, you know, and all that connection with Adam Good, and not just Adam Good, all that connection with the nuclear sub-AUKUS and the rail link, and where they're going to put the nuclear waste. I'm sort of thinking, brother, no matter who wins, whether it's the LNP or the Labour government with this Yes campaign, the US going to always win it. And they're trying to manufacture consent to make what is morally wrong legally right. And after all, brother, we're just there to advise. And I gave that analogy for people that, you know, that never heard. Mm. You know, when I was drunk, my siblings saw me. They were going to high school in town. They saw me drunk. They recognized me and they bought it. They acknowledged me. They took off. And what that says is, even though they recognized me and acknowledged me, I didn't have any power or control. They should recognize me, acknowledge me. Thank you very much, brother, for having my little say, brother.
No, thank you, my brother. Too deadly. Deadly Yarn there, someone regular caller here on your daily program, National Talk Back. But it's come to the time where 20 Trev signs off for today, 1 hour program. Thank you very much for your company, your mob. Back in the hots again tomorrow, that deadly number 1-800-422-416. And I got the news coming up via NERS, National News Radio Service. Otherwise, your mob, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. We'll yarn soon. Too deadly.